Mental health research and scholarly work benefits from diversity in editing, writing, and participation. Due to systemic inequities, the lack of representation in editors, peer reviewers, and faculty members to support emerging African American and Black scholars in mental health is a major challenge. However, one journal, founded by Dr. Wadley, is changing the status quo by lifting up the community of clinicians and scholars in the field of sexuality and relationships. In this episode, we are joined by co-host Dr. Jamaica Moore, where we converse with Dr. Wadley about his journey as the founding editor of the Journal of Black Sexuality and Relationships. Welcome to People of Color in Psychology, the show that explores mental health topics specific to culture, diversity, and communities of color. I am your host, Jack Tsun. Today's episode is unique as we have Dr. Jamaica Moore as our co-host. Dr. Moore is a licensed psychologist who specializes in evidence-based treatments for anxiety and OCD, has specialized training in exposure and response prevention, behavioral modification, acceptance and commitment therapy, and cognitive behavioral therapy. Additionally, Dr. Moore was our first guest on this podcast. Dr. Moore, thanks for being a co-host on this episode.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Do you want to maybe just share a little bit about what it's been like for you since our episode? And
sure. Yeah, I would say it's been pretty busy since our episode, obviously still in clinical practice. I did receive a lot of positive feedback from folks who did have an opportunity to listen to the podcast episode. They gave feedback that they felt like, even though a lot of them weren't clinicians, that it was pretty digestible information and they really enjoyed it. They found it really interesting, as we talked about, a lot of people really don't have as much in-depth information about OCD. And so people really enjoyed the content.
Oh, fantastic. Well, you know, I think one of the beautiful things about having all the diverse guest speakers on the, you know, show is we hear a lot of different perspective, which ties into today's unique episode, which is why we wanted to have you as our co-host. Is so today, our guest is Dr. James Wadley. He is the professor and chair of the Counseling and Human Services, Master of Human Services Department at Lincoln University, and the director of Sex Therapy Program at Council for Relationships. As a scholar, Dr. Wadley is the founding editor of the Journal of Black Sexuality and Relationships. He's authored several books, such as The Handbook of Sexuality Leadership and The Lost and Found Box, a provocative exploration about rediscovering happiness in the real you. As a licensed professional counselor, Dr. Wadley is a certified sex therapy supervisor and holds a private practice specializing in marriage, family, and addictions, including sexual addiction. As an African-American and Black licensed professional counselor, Dr. Wadley will be discussing with us the inception of the Journal of Black Sexuality and Relationships and the importance of supporting and advancing scholarly work for African-American and Black mental health professionals. Dr. Wadley, thank you so much for being on our show today.
Yeah, thank you so much for the cool invitation. When you reached out to me, or when Nebraska Press invited me to be a part of this podcast, it's like, what else would I be doing at this time that could be any more important than this? So thank you for having me during this time.
Yeah, you're welcome. I was actually surprised that a journal had reached out to us, because usually we've been, you know, catering towards, I guess, mental health, or, you know, mental health professionals who are the clinicians doing this type of treatment. And as I've been hearing about folks talking about their journey in their career, especially those who are getting PhD and needing publications as part of that, and how there's a lot of inequity involved, right, that happens early on in a career. And so the fact that you are bringing this mission on board and creating a space to talk about an important subject matter amongst the Black and African community. Can you share with me your process? Because you've done this for 10 years, right?
Yes.
Yeah, why don't you just tell me a little bit more about how it started?
Well, I guess I have time to give you the long-winded version. So thank you for the grace and space to offer the long-winded version. So when I was in graduate school, and my PhD is in human sexuality education. And over the time in graduate school, I would routinely have to write papers like everyone else. And I was always curious about why there weren't enough articles specifically devoted towards the experiences of persons of African descent or African American as it relates to sexuality. And, you know, I may find an article here or there or wherever, but it was kind of an arduous process. The world was a lot different when I went through graduate school, and that, you know, I'd have to physically go over to our library and then talk with the receptionist, who would then point me to, I guess there was a computer there. The computer didn't have a worldwide reach as it does now. It was to the holdings there in the university library. So nevertheless, when I finished, I just kind of kept in the back of my mind that I wanted to, if possible, I wanted to offer my own contribution to the scholarly works that were already out there on Black sexuality or convergence of race and sexuality. Fast forward about a few moons later, I won't tell you how many years, fast forward a few moons later, I'd started to write a book similar to some of my predecessors on Black sexuality. And so, and those folks may include, but not limited to, Robert Staples, Reginald Jones, Bell Hooks, Juan Battle, Sandra Barnes, Beverly Guy Sheftall. So I wanted to create my own book on Black sexuality. I guess it just something happened on a flight between Philadelphia and Dallas that I realized that I didn't want to do a book, because once someone writes a book, more often than not, someone else comes in and writes something after it, and then the book is no longer used or no longer used as much. So with that, I was like, well, I want to do a journal. So who does that? So when I landed in Dallas, I wrote up a proposal and I sent it out to about four or five different publishers. And the first publisher or one publisher got back to me and they said, yeah, James, this is great. This is a great idea to have a journal focused on the experiences of persons of African descent as it relates to sexuality. So I wrote them back and I said, this is awesome. But then I didn't hear back from them. The second publisher got back to me and they said, yeah, James, this is great. This is awesome. Let's have a conversation about it. I was like, all right. So I met with them and they loved the idea. And it just so happens that the University of Nebraska Press, they focus on startup journals. I'm not quite sure how I found them years ago, but they focus on startup journals. And they said, James, who's on your editorial board? Am I allowed to use profanity on this podcast?
Oh, sorry. unfortunately, no.
I was going to try to capture the essence of my experience, and so I'll make sure that I use PG/G language, because I don't know who's going to listen to this, but hopefully the folks who are listening to this understand that I'm very passionate about the work that I do. So the University of Nebraska Press asked me who's on my editorial board, and I was like, oh my goodness, I got to find some folks to help read these manuscripts. So I reached out to colleagues near and far, and I'm happy and flattered, really, that the first 14 folks on my editorial board, they were open to supporting it. So then Nebraska Press said, well, James, when will your first issue come out? And I was like, oh my goodness, I got to figure out how I can get some manuscripts from folks who probably don't even know me from a can of paint. So I put together a call for manuscripts. Folks started writing in and folks started sending in their manuscripts. So they started sending in the manuscripts. I assure them it's a double blind review, meaning that the person or the scholar who is submitting the manuscript, they won't know who's reading it. And the people who are reading it, they won't know who's writing it. So my job is to serve as the intermediary or the go-between as the editor-in-chief. So I got enough manuscripts to drive first issue. And I'll share that for my experience in publishing, there were times where the articles that I wrote, they needed some work and they needed a lot of editing and coaching. The scholar needed some, I needed some coaching. And I didn't have that with some of the larger journals or publishers or more, the ones that had been around for some time. So part of my commitment and our commitment is that when folks submit an article, that if it isn't in publishable quality, not only do they get feedback from the reviewers, but they also, I spend time with them, helping them write and rewrite their work. So that way, when it comes out or when it's published, it's a little bit more polished. So we do some handholding with the journal that might be significantly different than some of the other journals that are out there. No shade to the other journals, but we do some handholding because people of color, sometimes people in general, sometimes need a different kind of support than what the field sometimes offers. So we got enough articles for the first issue. We sent it in. And next thing I know, we had an issue, a nice shiny issue to come out. Now, the challenge with that original proposal that I offered to the University of Nebraska Press is that they asked me, they said, James, how many issues do you want to produce a year? And kind of shooting from the hip, I said, I don't know. We'll produce an article, excuse me, a journal quarterly. I'm like, oh, my God.
Wait, you came up with that benchmark on your own?
Right. Where did I get myself into? Because the more reputable journals, they don't just put out a publication.
A year.
Have at least four. So I was on the hook, signed contract for four issues a year. So the first issue, it came out, it's beautiful, yada, yada, yada. Folks are happy. They had a chance to publish. And, you know, in the academy, folks need to publish or perish. So it became a medium to help people go from A to B in their careers. So over the years, well, now that we're 10 years down the road, we've produced, I think, probably 35, because we've had some double issues come into play along the way. One of the things that I'm also proud of is that there are more voices at the table, and there's a plurality of perspectives that are offered in the journal. So I'm more than happy to step away and invite people to produce a guest, what's called the guest issue or special guest issue. The last issue, for folks who can't see, the last issue is a double issue produced by four of my colleagues on Black women and sexuality. And because I'm like whatever, whenever, however, whoever, I do invite other folks to share their scope of expertise as a guest editor. And it's allowed me to, I was complaining before we got on this podcast that I needed somebody to kind of step in, but I'm so happy and actually blessed that, you know, folks are willing to share their work in whatever manner, as it may relate to publishing research on the experiences of persons of African descent in terms of their sexuality. So here I am today.
Wow. Well, definitely quite a journey. Yeah.
And can I add a little bit more? I'm going to throw this out.
Yeah.
So about 3 years ago, I got an email from one of my publishers, which is Routledge Taylor & Francis. They reached out to me and they said, James, based upon we've seen your work or your community's work with the Journal of Black Sexuality and Relationships, and we want you to consider being the series editor for a book series devoted towards Black sexuality. So again, kind of shoot from the hip. I'm like, all right, let's go for it. So over the past 2 years, we've now published six books that are devoted towards Black sexuality. And what this is an expanded collection of folks who may have contributed to the Journal of Black Sexuality from years ago. So our articles range in terms of page count, probably from 20 to 40 pages, depending upon the kind of article. And so the invitation now is for folks who may have published in the Journal of Black Sexuality and Relationships, if they would like to publish a book. So as the series editor for the Leading Conversations About Black Sexualities and Identities, it becomes another medium for folks to get their work out to the community and even the world. The Journal of Black Sexuality and Relationships is now available at 1,300 institutions around the world via Project Muse. Leading Conversations About Black Sexualities and Identities is published by Routledge, who is one of the top three academic publishers in the world. So when folks get their stuff out, they have products that they can say, yeah, you know what? Here's my book. It's published through Routledge and it has a global following.
Very awesome. I have a question for you. You know, in grad school, we all choose different areas of interest. How did you land on sexuality?
Yeah, thank you for asking that. So for undergrad, I went to Hampton University, the real HU for you folks out there who may have an issue with that. But nevertheless, I went to Hampton University and I majored in psychology. Hampton was the best 4 years of my life because I couldn't walk to class any day without hugging at least two people. So it had a family feel. When it got to my last year, my senior year, we had to do a capstone project. I thought that I would be a child psychologist. And so my capstone project was on kids. And my professor said, James, why don't you do something on children's toy choices? So why do some boys choose trucks? Why do some girls choose dolls? At the time, we didn't have a language that addresses non-binary or intersex individuals. So I finished my capstone project. I then went to the University of Kentucky for school psychology. And Kentucky wanted me to work for a year before I went for my PhD. I started to get brochures from PhD programs up and down the Eastern Seaboard. And one day I just happened to get a brochure from the University of Pennsylvania Grad School Education that they offered a PhD in human sexuality education. I was like, oh my gosh, this is where I'm supposed to be. So I applied, I got in. 6 years later, I finished my PhD and then did another 4 years clinical postgrad at Thomas Jefferson or Council for Relationships. So as a couples, family, and sexuality therapist, I'm one of now two Black male certified sex therapist supervisors in the world. I'm certified through the American Association of Sexuality Educators, Counselors, and Therapists. And I'm also certified as a sex therapist supervisor through the Society for the Advancement of Sexual Health. So as a Black male sex therapist, business is good, as you can imagine. I get calls from near and far from people looking to have a different understanding of their relational and sexual experiences. And as Jack mentioned before, I'm licensed in both Pennsylvania and New Jersey, but my work spans the globe.
In relationships and sexuality, is there a specific specialty inside of that? When we think about training, that's not something that I can recall having any real sort of specific training in. I do have one colleague that I can think of, maybe two, who followed along that path really, really small. So yeah, I'm just curious to know, do you have, like when I think about anxiety, there's so many directions you can go. Like it can be more phobia-based or OCD-based, obviously, as a specialist. When we're specializing in anxiety, we do treat the gamut of that. But I'm just wondering, inside of what you do, is there an area of like a specialty area or a type of client that you really like to work with?
Yeah, so I'll start off by saying that my specialty is sex therapy. And what that looks like is that if some men struggle with anxiety, sometimes their anxiety enables them to experience a sexual dysfunction. It could be erectile dysfunction. It could be premature ejaculation. It could be priapism. It can be inhibited sexual desire. For some women who I see who struggle with anxiety, they may struggle with vaginismus, which is involuntary contractions of the vaginal walls. They may struggle with dyspareunia, which is pain during intercourse. They may struggle with body image issues or identity issues. I have any number of individuals and couples who may struggle with relational issues that may involve sexual compulsivity, where a person may have committed infidelity. If a third or a tertiary partner hasn't been negotiating a relationship, I also work with couples and thruples who consider consensual non-monogamy or ethical non-monogamy and people trying to navigate different relational constellations. So the work that I do spans the continuum of sexuality, and it's awesome.
I mean, especially if we're thinking about relationships, you know, sexual identity, whether it is straight or LGBTQ plus is a huge component within that. And I'm thinking about also, I've taken some human sexuality courses in undergrad, and I think the predominant approach was mostly based on the sensate-focused therapy approach. And I remember most of the authors or the researchers are, as you had mentioned, you know, mostly white men. And then, and I'm just thinking from my positionality as an Asian American, the conversation of sex is just, you know, like very frightening conversation. I remember having a textbook on human sexuality on my speakers. My parents walked in and like, oh my gosh, what are you studying? You know, it's like just a conversation of sex in itself is such a taboo topic. So I'm wondering just this idea of any, you know, over the years of your experience in your work, can you share with me some of the nuances that may be within the Black and African community that we want to pay attention to appreciate, to honor? Just kind of curious about that.
Well, one benefit of having the Journal of Black Sexuality and Relationships, as well as leading conversations about Black sexualities and identities, is that the journals, as well as my work, spans the continuum of Black sexuality. So you ask for a nuance that may be similar or different than other races or ethnicities. But I think from a bird's eye view, I think sometimes previous research creates a monolith out of all Black folks, all Black men and all Black women. The journal and the series addresses the nuances in so many different ways. I'm looking at Jamaica's hairstyle. And for some Black families, the conversations that they have with their children, that Black hair is beautiful as is. It doesn't have to take on a straight or finer posture as what some other ethnic backgrounds have. Black folks over the years have struggled with what their hair should look like. And I'm just talking just because I see Jamaica in the window. Also, I'm thinking about how colorism presents itself in Black communities, and that status is sometimes afforded to people of lighter or darker hues. Those nuances, I'm not going to say that they weren't ever captured in any of the research that I may have come across in when I was in graduate school, but it would be like one article. And then the next article, you had to go to some other institution to find another article that relates to colorism, texturism, or whatever about Black folks. The other piece about previous research is that sometimes when, and it's Black folks and white folks and whoever else in the middle, present Black sexuality in a way that there's some sort of health disparity, like something is always wrong in order to capture funding. People get funding based on what's wrong in Black communities. But for these two mediums, we really push our scholars to focus on what's right and how beautiful Black folks are in general and their expression of sexuality in general. So the nuance of Black sexuality, Journal of Black Sexuality and Relationships, as well as the leading conversations about Black sexualities and identities, the nuance is that it takes a holistic approach, a comprehensive approach to celebrating Black sexuality in all of its complexities.
Yeah, definitely taking a stance where most of the papers or even funding is from the perspective of here's a deficiency, here's a problem, and here's how we resolve it, as opposed to, wait, how can we just appreciate and enhance and bring this and really lean into this particular identity, this nuance, what I wear, my hairstyle. And I can't speak to the Black culture, but just the idea of being able to appreciate oneself is a very different stance as opposed to, oh, here's a problem and I have to fix it.
Yeah. And I just think the ability to have that represented, the nuance of it all, right? That as you spoke about, we don't get a lot of what I would say mainstream journal articles or researchers studying that aspect of our human experience. So as someone who identifies as an African-American Black woman, to know that that research is out there and it's being done and only doesn't take a deficit perspective, even if part of the research were about, you know, trying to understand an issue or address an issue, at least there's that representation there that I think is really, really important and often missing inside of our academic experiences and our training opportunities. And so I think like just having this podcast and the work that you've already done, getting the word out there a bit more can lead towards more people maybe even wanting to go into this area of study, which I just think is really, 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 really important because these conversation topics are out there and represented in social media as people talk about it in a layman's perspective. But I do think that from an education perspective, training is just really amazing work. And so kudos to you and your team.
Well, thank you.
And Dr. Wadley, tell me about this special issue. And I think that's one of the, you know, reasons we want to showcase the contributions of the authors, as well as what you're looking for our listeners who might be submitting, who may be interested in trying to get more involved scholarly or trying to get more publications. Can you share with us what you're looking for?
Well, this last issue that came out, it was volume 9, number issue 3 and 4. It's the winter and spring issue. So it was produced by Karen Sears. She was at Denison, Stacy Brown, who's at the University of Connecticut, Camila Woodson, who is at Howard University, Janice Moody, who is now a practitioner down in Texas. So four Black women got together. They wanted to put together a special issue. And so the articles in this particular issue includes Selecting Singlehood and Creating Community, How Black Women Are Reclaiming Agency and Defying Stereotypes. That's by Janice Lane, Erica Sims, Amber Clooney, and Camila Marie Woodson. The Love Jones Cohort, Single and Living Alone by Choice, Circumstance or Both, Is Marriage the Option by Latoya Council and Chris Marsh. Doing Me, Millennial Women's Expression of Sexual Agency in St. Kitts. That's by Xavier Roma Richardson. The next article is Concurrent Partnerships Among Black Women in the United States. That's by Karen Vanderpool, William Yarber, Holly Rosenberg, Rasul Mawat, and Justin Garcia. The next article is Sex Redefined, Exploring the Effects of Masturbatory Messaging Toward Black Girls and Women on Sexual Development and Practice. That's by Alicia Kilgore and Johnny Slane. The next article is Claiming the Erotic and Intimate Self, The Sexual Agency of Adolescent Girls in Trinidad and Tobago. That's by Leslie Robertson Ponset. The next article is Gendered Racial Socialization and Interracial Dating Attitudes Among Black Women. That's by Jasmine Jester and James Brooks. The next article is Now as a 50-Year-Old Woman, I Know Who I Am. Older Black Women Reflecting on Dating and Marrying White Men. That's by Vanessa Gonlin and Destiny Hannon. The next article is My God Has Not Spoken, A Qualitative Study of HIV Management Experiences Among African-American Women. It's by Donna Cole, Felipe Aguadello, Salima Sly, Natalie Mossenberg, Taryn Lippiner, and Barbara Guthrie. The next article is Black Women's Relational Competencies and Ethical Leadership in the Workplace. That's by Elise Ferguson and Tony King. The next article is Black Joy, Love, Intimacy, and Sexuality Amongst Black Intellectuals in the Academy. That's by Ada Randolph. And the last article is a consensus statement on clinical reasoning and clinical sexology, and that's by Shay Graham. So this particular issue, again, it's a double issue, and it's available through the University of Nebraska Press, and it's also available at Project Muse. And then the last book I'll also share for the Leading Conversations About Black Sexualities identities. We have Black Sexual Health and Black College Students, Exploring the Sexual Milieu of HBCUs. That's by Naomi Hall. The next one is Internalized Homonegativity Among Same Gender-Loving Black Men, An Exploration of Truth. That's by Patrick Ryan Grant. The next book is Black Women, Intersectionality and Workplace Bullying, Intersecting Distress. That's by Leah Hollis. And the last one to come out is The Colonization of Black Sexualities, A Clinical Guide to Relearning and Healing. That's by Ann Morrow.
Wow. Wow. Dr. Moore, you're also nodding.
Yeah, lots of great information. I think lots of different aspects of human sexuality, from single by choice and, you know, HIV, workplace bullying. So lots of different interesting topics covered. That's amazing.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, it really showcases the spectrum of all human experience in terms of sexual identity, sexuality. That is so phenomenal to be able to just talk about this subject matter.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. So Dr. Wadley, you mentioned that y'all were planning a special issue. Are y'all seeking submissions?
Yeah, okay. We're seeking submissions, but it's kind of on pause because the next two issues are double issues. And the next two issues are double issues, which means that over the next year, rather than producing four, we'll produce two. The next issue it's a double issue, and it's related to Title IX. So Leah Hollis, you may have heard Leah's name mentioned before. Leah is producing an issue on how Title IX has affected some Black women in the academy. So there's that. Then after this issue comes out in the fall, it's another double issue, and it's on Black folks' experience with immigration, and that's through another guest editor, who's Juan Battle, who is up at SUNY. So are we looking for articles right now? Yeah, because we're not turning anybody away. But if folks need a publication in the next year, at least about the next 6-7 months, they would have to wait. So I will put them in queue for the issue after Dr. Battle's issue comes out. And that won't be until summer 2024. So whoever's listening to this podcast, if you write an article or a manuscript and you want to submit it for the journal, we're not going to turn you away. But just know that you'll have to wait for the actual publication to come out, which won't be for another year.
Yeah, thanks for that timeline. And I also want to remind folks, the publication process, having gone through that, it does take roughly about a year. And so this is not unrealistic because the revise and resubmit process. Also, looks like in your case, it's very involved because you're also coaching them through the writing process, something very unique that most other journals are not providing. And so I think it's very reasonable, especially if we want to advocate and support Black and African American clinicians, researchers, and scholars to put their work out there. Go ahead and make that submission. Is there anything else y'all want to share or talk about?
Yes.
I got something. Sure.
So about 8 years ago, 9 years ago, 9 years ago, I used to be a part of a professional organization called the American Association of Blacks in Higher Ed. I sat on the advisory board for the organization, and I was a part of the conference planning committee. So we would organize conferences for Black folks in higher ed, and it's the AABHE is still around. So after I got the editorial board assembled the journal, one of my colleagues from AABHE said, who was also on the conference planning committee, she said, "All right, James, well, we got to get together and meet." So I was like, am I really going to do this dance? And I was like, yes, I'm about to host a conference. So I went out, I found a venue in Philadelphia. The venue in Philadelphia asked, what organization wants to host this conference? And so at the time, I was like, well, it's not a James Wadley conference. That ain't going to work. So I went back to the folks on the editorial board. I was like, all right, folks, we need to have a name to go along with it. So the folks on the editorial board voted for the Association of Black Sexologists and Clinicians, which is why my name listed at the bottom is the ABS, the ABSC, Association of Black Sexologists and Clinicians. So I went back to the venue and I signed the contract. And I was on the hook as the lead person for a ton of money. And so they asked me, when did I want to host my first conference? I said, give me a year. So started sending out emails, started calling folks like, hey, you know what? We got a conference coming up. And would you like to submit a proposal to present at the conference? And I got a nice number of folks who were interested in sharing their work around Black sexuality. And so for the first conference that we had here in Philadelphia, we had 147 people. And it was beautiful because something like that hadn't really happened like that before. So about once it got to like the 80th or the 90th registrant, it felt like we had enough legs to possibly host a second conference. And again, you know, I didn't have a business plan and kind of shoot from the hip. And so some of the other organizations that I've been involved with, sometimes they can't get out of their way in that I've wanted to be a part of an organization that hosts conferences near and far, meaning that I don't feel like we always have to be bound to the United States. So I reached out to some folks in the Caribbean, and the folks at the University of the Virgin Islands got back to me. They said, sure, you can have a conference here. So in October, we hosted our first conference here in Philadelphia, had 147 people. Then when we hosted a conference in St. Thomas, we got about 25 people, and we called that our Spring Roundtable Series. We then circled back that fall and hosted another conference in Fort Lauderdale, had about 85 people, and then had our second, and that was in October. Then in the springtime, we hosted our second Spring Roundtable Series. We came back to the United States and hosted our third conference in Chicago and tried to do it during Black History Month in February. And let me tell you, it was so cold. That had to have been the coldest day of my life.
I can only imagine.
I'm like, never again. So we've hosted 7 conferences in St. Thomas, and it's only this past year that we shifted to Jamaica to complement the work that I've been doing at the University of the West Indies. So we've hosted 3 in the United States, 8 in the Caribbean, and then internationally, our first conference was in Cape Town, South Africa. Then the following year, this is about 5 years, maybe about 6 years ago. And then 5 years ago, we went to hosted a conference in Prague. And what was significant about going to Prague was that when we were walking around downtown Prague, some of the folks asked me, they said, James, I didn't know there weren't going to be any Black folks in Eastern Europe. And I was like, well, what'd you think? So you have all these Black and brown folks walking around Prague. Ain't no Black folks in Prague. You might see one or two, but then you got a cluster of Black folks. You got 15, 20 Black folks walking around Prague. It's something going on. You know, back in the day, they used to call it an uprising, but it was an uprising in a different form. So then we left Prague, and right before the travel ban, we hosted a conference in Havana, Cuba, right before we couldn't go anymore, which was good. Then we left there, and then we went to San Pedro, which is right outside of Belize. So you fly into Belize, and then you catch a water taxi to San Pedro. Last year, we hosted our international lecture series in Montreal. And this year, in October, we'll be in Cartagena, Colombia. So there is the written word, which is the Journal of Black Sexuality and Relationships, as well as leading conversations about Black sexualities and identities. But then what's nice about our community is that we have been open to sharing our research, clinical best practice, and pedagogy around the world. So this year we'll be in Cartagena, Colombia. Possibly next year, I'm going to have Black folks in Iceland or Switzerland.
Yeah, that's very nice, because we actually really don't think about taking such an international approach oftentimes when it comes to like meeting with the conference. And so it's really cool that you've been able to take this and share it and share resources.
Yeah, well, so I'm faculty at Lincoln University, probably doing too much for too long. My provost said, James, you're eligible for a sabbatical. So I was like, all right. So then I had an opportunity to either go over to Nigeria or to go to Jamaica or the University of the West Indies. So folks at the University of the West Indies came back. And so I've been going back and forth between here and Kingston. And I don't know, somewhere down the line, I was like, all right, we're going to host a conference. We'll leave St. Thomas because we've done that 7 times. We're going to go over here to Jamaica. And it was really, really nice. You can probably see it. I know the listeners can't see the smile on my face, but I'm telling you.
I'm smiling.
It was really, really nice.
Well, Dr. Wadley, thank you very much. Is there any other final thoughts? And maybe the important question is, how can listeners reach you?
I don't know. What do the young folks do nowadays? You say, follow me. Follow me on social media. You can follow me at PhD James W. Don't get caught up in my familial shenanigans. I do talk a lot of trash. I do tell a lot of lies, and I embellish just like everybody else on social media. You can send me an email at phdjamesw@yahoo.com. Yes, I'm old school. Yes, I still use Yahoo. Don't judge me. And I'm happy that Jack and Jamaica, this is a safe space for folks to be who they are. So you please send me an email on yahoo.com. Or yeah, you can Google me. Hell, I'll pop up. Ain't no other James Wadleys, but there is one in Oklahoma. But he doesn't look like me, so I'm hoping that the listeners will find me and they can reach me anywhere. Thank you so much for this opportunity to be a part of this podcast. I really enjoyed having an opportunity to at least share a portion of my story with you too.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you for sharing.
I hope you liked this episode. Please subscribe and share. We love to hear from you, so send me a message on LinkedIn or email. The People of Color in Psychology is brought to you by the Multicultural Counseling Institute, and I'm your host, Jack Sun.